This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
Good to have you with us for this edition of Cradle My Heart Radio. I'm Kim Cotola, and our primary mission here is helping people to deal with losses that accumulate around the loss of a child. Now, we talk about this week in and week out through the issue of abortion, and much of what we do is aimed toward preventing abortion, but also, of course, helping those it hurts. And I think that there's a great deal that we can learn from those who have been impacted by other losses, and particularly by the loss of a child after the child was born and had become a visible member of the family. And that's what we're going to talk about this time through with our guest, Angela Waite. Angela's a unique theologian, an enthusiastic, entertaining, visional, courageous, and original speaker. She holds her Master's of Divinity and also has created a successful personal ministry and a nonprofit organization called Ramsey's Rescue. Angela, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for having me today, Kim.
So your story, as the stories that we hear so many times here on Cradle My Heart Radio, is a story that's born of loss. And when we think about the loss of a child, it's one of the most devastating things that anybody can experience. Share your story, because I think that it resonates with folks who have had a tragic accident in their lives, regardless of what the circumstances or the details might have been.
Absolutely. You know, I'm a mom to three boys, and our youngest son, Ramsey, at the age of 3 and a half, drowned in our backyard pool. And, you know, we were raising our children in the fear and admonition of God, and we thought we were doing it all right, and then suddenly I find myself standing at the poolside. You know, it was a circumstance that I never ever dreamed I would be walking through or finding myself in, and just devastating. It was a devastating circumstance, and the day, you know, it changed everything in our lives, Kim. Suddenly, I was a mom to two sons. You know, toddlers, they require things of you that your older children do not, and so within a blink of an eye, I transitioned from mommy to mom against my will. And so I had to find a new norm. I was no longer mommy. And so our families walked through this. Ramsey drowned in 2000. So this is not a new wound for us. But that circumstance, that tragedy that shook us to the core, honestly, it thrust me into seminary. It impacted my husband and my children, you know, in different ways as we grieved the loss. For me, I'm wired a little bit differently, and I had to have answers from God Almighty. I couldn't hear it from the pulpit. I couldn't hear someone else's advice and wisdom to me. I was at that place where it shook me to the core. And I had to have answers, and I had to have them my own way. And that is where I found myself that day. I had to have more. And the answers from, you know, maybe a year ago that I had even given as a pastor, that I had even given people that had walked through a devastation like this, I found that those answers would not hold me.
Angela Waite is our guest. She's the author of Bomb Pops. I got to get this right. Bomb Pops, Blow Dryers, and Butterfly Kisses.
Yes.
And it tells the story of so much dramatic change. I think it's fair to say that change is the word that characterizes your story, because, yes, there is loss at the center and the beginning of the story, but there's also so much restoration and healing and hope, but there's a lot of change. Now, I know that when a child is lost, it can mean the casualty of the relationship as well.
Yes.
And so talk about what happened in your marriage in the short term after your son died.
Yes. 2 days after my son drowned, I received a phone call from a woman that was probably a three-hour drive from us, and I had not talked to her in years. And she was one of my mentors in her early 80s, and she had heard about Ramsey. And the phone rang, and of course, we were avoiding all types of contact phone and, you know, people showing up at the home. I just couldn't. And the phone rang, and my mother answered, and she said, I must speak to her. So I pick up the phone, and I just heard her voice, tears streaming down my face, and she said this, don't you dare allow the enemy to destroy your marriage. And I am telling you, those words shook me to my core, because that was not even on my radar. You know, I was trying to survive, and we were in denial, and I kept expecting Ramsey to walk up to the door and somebody, you know, he had walked away from the home. We were in denial. And she spoke those words with such depth of love in her heart. And I later found out that her daughter had walked through the death of a child, and their marriage was destroyed within the first 6 months. And she spoke that, and she spoke it with such love, but she spoke it with such authority that I knew that was the voice of the Lord through her. And she said, don't you dare allow the enemy to steal your marriage. And I hung up the phone, and I told my husband word for word everything she said. And from that moment forward, that became our focus. Regardless of where we were, regardless of what our eyes were seeing and the pain that we did not allow our marriage to take the back seat. We just didn't. From that moment forward, it was almost like a warning, and I felt like it was from the Lord. And I love this precious woman. She's passed on now, but those words that she spoke that day, Kim, are the same words that I use every time I minister to couples in this circumstance. Keep your marriage at the front of the suffering. Keep your marriage right there. Keep your eyes on it. Be sensitive to where your spouse is in the grieving process. So over the next 18 months, Jay and I grieved differently. He walked through anger. I never walked through that. I think I was so broken, I couldn't even muster up enough to be angry. But he did. He did. He never lost the fear of God in his grieving process, but he was angry. He's a veterinarian, and he saves little creatures every day, and so he was not at our home that day. He had not gotten home from work yet. And so, you know, his struggle was different than mine. But we never took our eyes off of each other in the process. And we talked more than we ever had. And we talked eye to eye, looking in each other's eyes, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was really important. And Ramsey drowned in 2000. And I'm telling you, today, our marriage is stronger than I can't imagine it being where it is today without the path that we walked. It is our focus.
Well, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but what just occurred to me as you're speaking, and it's like a flash. You know, as you describe the fact, and I've heard this about so many other couples, that your grieving was uneven. It didn't match up.
Right.
That can be an opportunity for you to be ministering to one another, because the likelihood that you're going to be in abject sorrow at any given moment, both at the same time, is probably not great.
Absolutely.
And so if you're not experiencing a particular emotion, you can, so to speak, be there for your spouse in that moment, I imagine. It sounds like that's kind of the process that the two of you developed.
That is exactly what happened. And, you know, I remember praying and thanking God for that circumstance, that we did not grieve at the same level simultaneously. There would be days or weeks where I, just being transparent, couldn't get out of the floor. And that would be the week that my husband would be you know, the Rock of Gibraltar. It would be that week. And then maybe 2 weeks later, you know, he would try to get ready for work and his shirt was wet from tears, and I would be able to be that strength. And so we did not grieve at the same rate and at the same place. And I just believe God was doing different things in us. And we were able to be that. Mm-hmm. And so the enemy didn't get a foothold in there, you know, because we were fasting and we were praying and honestly holding on to him with everything that we had.
And so let's talk about then, I'm imagining this was a real blessing for your children. This is, you know, it's the community suffers when a child dies, but boy, the people in the close family circle, of course, are impacted the most. Talk about being a parent to children who've survived the death of a sibling.
Yes. Benjamin, our oldest son, he was 12 years old at the time, and he was the one that actually got Ramsey out of the pool. He was upstairs in his bedroom, and he had food poisoning from a school at the end of the year party. And he had food poisoning, and he was so sick. And I have been swimming my whole life, Kim, and when I looked over and saw that Ramsey was in the bottom of the pool, I almost drowned trying to get him out. And I've been swimming my whole life. And I'm crying. We live next door to a church, and I'm crying out for someone to help me. Benjamin comes running down, projectile vomiting, you know. He dives into the pool, and I'm telling you, the moment he did, the fear that gripped me was unlike any other I had ever known. He goes into the bottom of the pool, and I just dropped to my knees because you can imagine what was going through my mind. And he comes up with Ramsey in his arms. And what we walked through with Benji was he had such guilt because he was doing CPR. We were working with Ramsey. Actually, Benji was. And I'm on the phone with 911, and Benji felt like he let him down. He could not. He was working and doing CPR until the helicopter arrived with no success. And he felt like he had let him down. And so he went through a short season of depression, and we were being counseled the whole time. But, you know, you can imagine as the big brother, he was Ramsey's hero. And when he needed to respond, he was unable to be successful. And so that was very difficult walking. You know, we were all grieving in different places. Honestly, as parents, we were trying to survive, and our children were grieving, and in retrospect, I doubt that we handled our children, as good as we could have. You know, we were just all in survival mode. We were listening and we were watching, but, you know, later on I realized there were things that we missed. You know, we were just in that moment. And then Chandler, he's our middle son, and he was 8 years old at the time. And so I oftentimes get a visual of him, Kim. He was standing on the deck, just wringing his hands, because he was watching his little brother in the bottom of the pool, his big brother diving in to get him out, and all of the, you know, first responders and the ambulance and the helicopter landing, and he's 8 years old. You know, and he and Ramsey were inseparable. If one was on the trampoline, the other was. If one was riding a bike, the other was. And so they were always together. Like, you know, he was like mini-me. And so they were always together. And so for him, not only did he lose his brother, but he lost, he describes it now to me like losing a limb. And so for Chandler, he completely shut it down. Benjamin grieved and he wept. But Chandler, being 8 years old, he completely shut it down. And so as I wrote the book, Bomb Pops, Blow Dryers, and Butterfly Kisses, he was on his way back from Austria, it might have been Thailand, and he read the book, and he wept all the way home on the flight. And he said, Mom, and he's now 23, he said, Mom, I had blocked almost the entire story. And that really shocked me. You know, we talk about Ramsey, but I did not realize how much he had blocked. The older son did not have it blocked. And so they grieve differently. And, you know, I would love to say to you, my husband and I should get the parent award for walking our children through this. But in reality, we missed a lot because the grieving was it happened suddenly. And we went from everything being normal to a new norm, trying to survive.
Angela Wade is our guest. When we're talking about her ministry as well as her book, to help parents of children who have died, but also to help family members who have lost loved ones, to help people whose marriages have been challenged by the death of a family member, and people whose faith has been shaken to its very core. All of these themes emerge in Angela's story. And Angela, it's such a short format that we have here. We've got 15 minutes remaining, but there's so much to cover. I want to talk about the rest of them. Now, some people, you know, infamously will say terribly insensitive things to grieving parents with the best of intentions.
Yes.
But you also experienced some real ugliness just because people are either curious when a child dies or they're suspicious. Talk about that aspect of having to, it's almost like an added layer. I'm sure it's an added layer of suffering. It's almost like a persecution in the midst of your suffering. That must have been incredibly difficult.
Yes. You know, I was 38 years old, and I had tons of friends with children at the same age as Ramsey. And what I realized was happening is that the reality of a child drowning, you burying your child, the reality of that truth itself caused friends to run. Not only could they did not know how to help me carry the burden. You know, the scripture tells us we're supposed to help each other carry the burden. And I believe because it hit so close to home, and they had to explain it to their 3.5-year-old children, that they, rather than face me and try to help me, they left me. It was just too real. It was too raw. And, you know, I believe as Christians that we live in, I call it a bubble. We live in a bubble where nothing this devastating could happen to us. And so when it happens to someone in our sphere of influence, then suddenly we're forced to look at that circumstance for ourselves. You know, I had a pastor's wife say to me, "Well, Angela, you're just going to have to find a way to get over this. You have 2 other children. It's been 6 months. Did I mention it had only been 6 months? But she could not bear watching our pain. And so as a pastor's wife, she needed me to be okay. She needed me to be strong, and she needed me to be okay because she had little children. And so that was one of the most devastating things I heard, is you have a husband and you have 2 other children, almost as if the 2 other children could take his place. You know, I had multiple people say
or almost
to me,
as if you're failing them somehow by being
absolutely.
Sad.
Absolutely. Mm. And I would have people say, "Well, God needed another angel." And Kim, I'm telling you, that was the one. That was the one that I honestly could not hear it one more time. And I believe the Lord protected me because that was the one I heard the most. And so I address these topics in my book from a theological standpoint because I need
say,
people.
It's so ignorant,
right?
For a Christian ever to say such a thing.
Absolutely, and you know what? I've heard pastors say it in the pulpit, and as a pastor, I think we want to fix the circumstance, and so we just grab. I pray I never do, but I've just heard it so many times, and I had to address this error. And I spend an entire chapter called Job's Friends in the book where I talk about scripture being taken out of context and, you know, well-meaning phrases and words because we're desperate to help when in reality the words that we're speaking, I call them fluff words now, but in reality the things that are being spoken are the words and the phrases that were destroying my family all in the name of the Lord. All in the name of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Angela Wade is our guest, and she also has very helpful suggestions about things you can say, things that you ought to know about how to help somebody who's in a desperate circumstance after the death of a child. Her book is called Bomb Pops, Blow Dryers, and Butterfly Kisses. And Angela, again, it's a short interview for such a deep and such a sensitive and personal story, but I want to give you the opportunity to talk about how your new normal, if you will. I want to give you the chance to talk about your new normal, if you will, about how things look today, 15 years afterwards. I know that, as I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, many of our listeners and many of the former guests on this program, and I include myself in that number, have experienced child loss through abortion.
Yes.
And it was much longer than 15 years ago in my case. And,
yes.
You know, I will never forget the experience of having been mother to that child, nor do I ever wish to. So the question becomes, when you have lost a child who's who you've known in this side of heaven, how do you, what does normal look like going forward? How are you, how is your family thriving and growing in the aftermath of this?
Absolutely. And I have lost two children through abortion as well, and as a very young woman. And so I appreciate you taking a stand on this and helping women, because it is loss. And I talk a little bit about abortion in my book, because it is death. It is death. And those children are significant. From where we are right now, our family is thriving. We have walked through a lot of fire, and the whole way we have held on to the hem of the garment, to be honest. And God is doing great things through that circumstance. That was one of the phrases as well. People would always say, God's going to use this circumstance to do great things. And honestly, that made me angry, because I would never give up a child to do anything else, you know. And so I understand the heart, but the timing was wrong for that sentence. But now where we are, my oldest son plays professional baseball. My middle son, he works in New York. He works at the United Nations with Israel, doing great things. God's really doing great things through those boys. My husband has a successful ministry, or successful business. We are in ministry together. I pastor. I'm one of the pastors on staff at a local church in my city. Ramsey's Rescue, if I could talk about that. Bomb Pops, Blow Dryers, and Butterfly Kisses, the name of the book. Basically, that was not the original name of the book. And one night I felt the Lord waken me, and he spoke these three phrases, and I wrote them down, and I didn't realize what it was. And, right after Ramsey passed away, everybody wanted me to read a book. And so I was gifted multiple books, and Kim, I would open the bag or the gift and look at the book, and I was more depressed from the book cover than I was before I opened the gift. And, you know, because they're always gloom and doom and dreary, and, you know, looks like swampland, and they're so sad. And so when the Lord gave me the title of this book, it's a very, I believe you've seen the cover, it's very happy. There's a Bomb Pop on it, and Bomb Pop has endorsed this book. But, you know, popsicles make us happy, and this was the last thing Ramsey was eating immediately before he drowned. And the cover is very simple, white, and it has a Bomb Pop on it. And when you look at the cover, it makes you a little bit happy, and you don't even know the story yet. But with that being said, all the proceeds from the book fund a 501c3 called Ramsey's Rescue. And that is what has come out of this circumstance. We're in the process right now of praying about the first location. We were just given land in Kingston, Jamaica. And our goal, we feel like the Lord is directing us with the proceeds of speaking engagements about the book and book sales, are to feed hungry tummies of the abandoned children. I don't even care where it is. I'm going to go wherever God says. and do whatever he says about these orphanages. But, you know, it's more than feeding the hungry tummies. It's about giving them a safe place. It's about teaching them the fear and raising them in the fear and admonition of the Lord and teaching them the things of God and giving them hope.
Amen. Angela Waite, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing hope and for sharing your story. Again, a very tender one, but also one that lifts us up and gives us some good direction if we're in a season of struggling with loss or coming alongside others who are. We've got links at cradlemyheart.org to all of Angela's materials, and just want to thank you again for being our guest here on Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Kim.
Now stay with us here at Faith Radio. We'll continue taking a look at some of the top stories in the news this week on the life issue, and our phones will be open for your phone calls as well. Jot down the number, 1-800-811-3003, here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken again, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
That is our number, and we are live for you, so please consider giving us a call and lending your voice to the conversation tonight. We'd love to hear from you, Kim Cotola. I'd love to hear your thoughts about such a touching story that opened the program tonight from Angela Waite. If you have suffered the loss of a child, I know that Angela's words provided comfort, and I know you probably experienced many of the same reactions to the reactions that you received as a grieving parent. We could talk about that, because there are some things that help and that hurt whenever we're suffering loss, but I think it's really important for those who listen to the program who've not ever experienced abortion to understand Angela's words when she says she's experienced both and that abortion is also a real loss. So here's our number, 800-811-3003, 800-1-800-811-3003. It's a toll-free call, and we would love to hear from you. There are a lot of stories in the news that we could talk about this week, and one of the ones that got a lot of attention on social media was Kelsey Grammer's pro-life T-shirt. This was covered everywhere from pro-life websites to far-left websites, and a lot of controversy and a real firestorm after Kelsey Grammer posted a picture, and so did his wife Katie. They're wearing different colors of the same shirt, and it shows an automatic pistol, and it says, "Would it bother us more if they used guns? Abort73.com." Kelsey Grammer is sporting a smile, and maybe you've seen him posting pictures of himself on social media with Dr. Ben Carson, and he's conservative politically. He's talked about the fact that he thinks that his being a Republican in Washington cost him an Emmy nomination for Boss, his cable series. What do you think about, would it bother us more if they used guns? What the shirt is trying to say, I think, is we get very upset when gun violence happens to children, but we are not upset that abortion violence is happening to children every day. Now, some who are very sensitive to the guns issue were very offended, saying that it was an extremely insensitive shirt to be sporting right after the Oregon shootings. And there were two other campus shootings following the Oregon shooting. This week, there were two other campus shootings. And so those who are blaming guns for those tragedies are saying, you know, this shirt is inappropriate. And there were others who were saying it's absolutely an appropriate expression. What do you think? 1-800-811-3003. 1-800-811-3003. A lot of his detractors got real ugly and real personal about his personal life, which, you know, he's had issues in his personal life. But I think that, you know, many of us who arrive at a conservative point of view do so because we've overcome the issues that led us down a different path. We're not a political program here, but just curious if you have a reaction to that one at 1-800-811-3003. Was it appropriate? Is it not appropriate? Do you agree that we should be equally concerned about the violence that's happening to children as we are about, through abortion, that is, as we are about gun violence? 1-800-811-3003. Also in the news this week, the National Abortion Federation is the reason why the Center for Medical Progress did not present all of their documentation to the congressional committees before the hearings began, because the National Abortion Federation had the courts issue a restraining order, and they said that if this information became public, their members would be endangered. Well, a judge now has said that the Center for Medical Progress may comply with a congressional subpoena, and that some of that undercovered footage, which was shot at the National Abortion Federation's annual convention, can be shown. A federal judge ruled that they may comply with the congressional subpoena to provide lawmakers with its unedited footage, despite that temporary restraining order granted to the NAF, barring the group from releasing the footage. In a decision issued this week, U.S. District Judge William Orrick ruled that Congress has the power to investigate, and it's not up to the courts to go beyond the narrow confines of determining that the committee's inquiry is in its province. Importantly, in our constitutional system, there are three equal branches of government, and courts should refrain from creating needless friction with a coordinate branch of government, Orrick added. That's U.S. District Judge William Orrick. The judge's ruling prevents a potential conflict that is between the congressional subpoena authorized by Representative Jason Chaffetz of Utah, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, and the temporary restraining order. Now, see, these undercover videos released by the Center for Medical Progress raised allegations that Planned Parenthood and its affiliates are selling aborted fetal body parts to researchers for profit. And spokespersons for the nation's largest abortion provider have denied participation in illegal transactions and have claimed that they're only reimbursed for the cost of a donation. But nobody has yet seen that footage that was recorded at the annual meeting of the National Abortion Federation. And so they were granted a temporary restraining order barring David DeLeiden from releasing the footage of its meeting. The NAF has gone to extraordinary lengths to keep DeLeiden's footage of its annual meetings out of the hands of law enforcement and the Congress, said Peter Breen of the Thomas More Society. And he said, "We're pleased that the district court has today decided to allow Congress to seek the unedited footage of the wrongdoing uncovered by David's investigation. So we will continue to urge the district court to allow David to release more undercover videos featuring the footage from these annual meetings to the public, so that the American people can make their own assessment of the practices of Planned Parenthood and the National Abortion Federation." In a statement, Vicky Saporta, who's the president and CEO of the National Abortion Federation, denied that her organization had tried to prevent the CMP from providing compelled responses to lawful subpoenas. She said, "We don't believe all of the footage CMP stole from our meetings is responsive to this subpoena. We urge the committee to require DeLeiden to turn over all documents and emails relevant to the conspiracy and fraud he committed against NAF and our members," she said. Meanwhile, Elizabeth Slattery, a legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, said in yet another delaying tactic, the NAF asked Judge Arik to interfere with the House's subpoena of the CMP videos. The judge is right to allow David DeLeiden to comply with this subpoena, which is fully within the House Oversight Committee's investigative authority. The National Abortion Federation is clearly worried about what other horrendous details may come out in these unreleased videos. And that's the reporting of Kate Scanlon, who was writing about this development in the case in the Daily Signal this week. And, you know, the reason why this matters is that privacy and secrecy are two very different things. And the abortion industry operates within a secrecy atmosphere that allows a lot of what they do to never, ever see the light of day. And when it comes to light, what is actually occurring, many times people reject the whole gambit. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. Are you curious what happens at a National Abortion Federation convention? Would you like to know how the practitioners and those who are profiting from abortion go about their annual business with one another? I'm very curious about that, for one. I'm extremely curious about it. It is a for-profit business. We learned that in the Kermit Gosnell case. I mean, he was working and operating his clinic, his facility, in one of the poorest neighborhoods in his area of Pennsylvania. And when they raided his home, they found $250,000 in cash under the bed. He had other properties he owned. He had other luxury items that he owned, and he had $250,000 in cash. 1-800-811-3003 is our number. Would like to know, do you want to see what is on the National Abortion Federation convention videos? It's not likely to be as grisly or as gruesome as the footage that showed, you know, the fetal body parts in the petri dishes or in the pie dishes in the laboratory. But it's more likely to be shocking as in terms of what is actually going on behind the scenes that you and I don't know about, and that the people who support abortion on demand as public policy, you would hope, don't know about. 1-800-811-3003. Someone was talking to me this week and they said, how can people not get it? They were talking about Luana Stoltenberg's testimony before Congress this week and Dr. Levitano, a former abortionist. And this person, it was being replayed on a radio broadcast. I think Janet Parshall might have had it on her broadcast this week. And Dr. Levitano's testimony was so graphic. This person I was speaking with said, I couldn't listen to it. I had to turn it off. It was too upsetting to picture it, you know, to think about what he was actually saying that he did as an abortion doctor. And he said, how can people not get it? How can people find this acceptable? And I really believe, I mean, I don't have the answers. I'm not the all-wise one on this topic, but I really believe that people who are trying to be fair-minded accept abortion because they don't think the unborn are fully human members of the human family. They don't think they are. Now, some will say that they do believe they are, but they think women's rights trump the rights of an unborn fetus. But either way, if we give human rights by degree, there is no such thing as human equality. If we say the strong get more rights than the weak, there is no such thing as human equality in that type of economy. What do you think? 1-800-811-3003. A number of things we could talk about in the news and There are more stories out there, too, that we'll continue to bring you. I'm Kim Cotola, and I'm so glad that you're listening. We've got a lot of these stories linked this time at our Facebook page, so please go there. Please like the page. We're always hoping to gain more followers that way and draw you into the broadcast and all of the resources that we have available on our website, which is cradlemyheart.org. And if you go there, it's easy to link up to our Facebook page, but if you just want to go to facebook.com/cradlemyheart, you'll find the news stories that we're discussing tonight linked there too. So join in and let us know your thoughts at 1-800-811-3003 here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
We are here for you, and one of the things that we love to do on this program is to hear your story. 800-811-3003, that's our number, 1-800-811-3003. And there is so much value in being able to speak out the truth of what has happened in our lives. And I'll never forget the story of a woman who told me about the judicial bypass. We've got a story posted about that on our Facebook page this week, too. And it's a sympathetic story, really, to the teenagers who seek the judicial bypass. The story appeared in the Chicago Tribune, How Young Women in Illinois Get Abortions Without Parental Notification is the headline. And so the cases unfold in careful confidentiality. The story begins, and you read about how, most minors voluntarily involve parents in the decision to have an abortion, but there are those who don't. And so they file a petition anonymously, and then the petitioner meets with a judge in an empty courtroom or in the judge's chambers. The judge knows her only as Jane Doe. The transcript and court records are sealed, and at the end of the hearing, a young woman generally hurries home, hoping her parents never know where she was. And the judicial bypass allows a minor to have an abortion without parental consent in states where there are laws requiring parental consent. And I remember the story of the woman who told me about her judicial bypass experience. She said, I was 16 years old. And she said, I had failed school, and I was living on a friend's couch, and I had no job, and I was pregnant. And the judge asked me one question, are you mature enough to make this decision? And when I said yes, without knowing any of those circumstances of my life, I was handed a slip of paper that allowed me to destroy the life of my child. You know, the judicial bypass, in my opinion, is a counterfeit compassion. Because it says to a teenager, your parents don't get it, but we do. So let us be the wise adults in your life. But of course, then they're not around to help pick up the pieces. And I understand that not every teenage girl has good moms, good dad, good parents. I understand that. But the judicial bypass puts people in the role of parent for a moment, and then they fade away. How can that be right? How can that be a just thing to do to a young person? 1-800-811-3003 is our number. 800-811-3003. Off the air, Frank had a comment about Kelsey Grammer's T-shirt. If you're just joining us, he caused a storm in social media this week when he posted a picture on his Instagram. It's an automatic handgun, and it says, would it bother us more if they used guns? Abort73.com. And the message, of course, is we get rightly upset when children are killed with gun violence, but where is our compassion when children are dying every day due to abortion? And Frank's comment is, Frank wants the listeners to know abortions kill more people every year than guns do. I'm not sure he didn't cite the statistic, but that's probably true. I mean, there are close to 1 million abortions every year, one side or the other. you know, that we can extrapolate, because our government doesn't require anybody to report. All reporting on abortions is voluntary. How can that lead to a safe circumstance for women when there is no mandatory government oversight of something that can lead to sterility and other physical health problems? How can that be right? 1-800-811-3003. So maybe you want to let us know what you think about the whole judicial bypass. Judicial bypass hearings came to Illinois, the Chicago Tribune reports, in 2013 when the Illinois Supreme Court ruled the parental notification law passed in 1995 was constitutional and allowed it to take effect. And so in 2013, the most recent year statistics are available, 1,762 women under 18 had abortions in Illinois. And, of course, you know, the different sides of the abortion debate see the hearings differently. The ACLU, which litigated against parental involvement laws in Illinois for nearly 40 years, considers them an intrusive part of a law it still opposes. The judicial bypass is an enormous hurdle for young women to have to overcome before they can obtain health care, the ACLU says. Americans United for Life, on the other hand, supports parental involvement laws and the judicial bypass as a necessary safeguard, although it's concerned that some judges may be too quick to grant a waiver, because it is not supposed to be a rubber stamp. That comes from Mary Harned, a staff counsel for Americans United for Life. She said it's to be used in extreme situation when a minor's parent is abusive or dangerous. Nationwide, most judges grant most petitions, said Carol Sanger, a Columbia Law School professor who studies judicial bypass hearings. In Illinois, she said there have been no denials that were then appealed. 1-800-811-3003. Is that right? Is that our country doing right by our young people? Allowing a teenager who doesn't want to involve her parents. Do we believe that all 1,700 of those girls in Illinois were being abused or in danger? The young woman who told me her story said that she was not. She was just in a period of friction with her parents. 1-800-811-3003. And what was the friction centered upon? Her poor choices. 1-800-811-3003. And, you know, this is something that I have to share with you because it really helped me personally this week. I have some different challenges that at different times seem to be ongoing. I know you probably do too. Some things that you seem to return to again and again, and you just don't feel like you've ever overcome them really. And this is a message from Oswald Chambers' classic devotional, My Utmost for His Highest, that really helped me, because when we talk about friction with our parents as teenagers, we probably all had those moments, right? It's just part of the thing. But here's what Chambers says about our relationship with our Heavenly Father. He says, we don't grow into a relationship step by step. We either have a relationship or we don't. He says, God doesn't continue to cleanse us more and more from sin, because the Word says in 1 John 1:7, but if we walk in the light, we are cleansed from all sin. And so Chambers says, and I think this is really important, and I hope that this touches you as it did me this week. He said, it's a matter of obedience. Once we obey, the relationship is instantly perfected. But if we turn away from obedience for even 1 second, darkness and death are immediately at work again. And I want you to know, if you're feeling like you're struggling in darkness, you don't understand why you can't seem to break free of it, I want to propose to you that there could be something you need to obey. And maybe it's just that still, small voice that when you're about to do that thing that keeps troubling you, that keeps setting you back, if the Holy Spirit comes and says, no, don't, but you do it anyway and you harden your heart to His voice, that's disobedience. It's really hard for me to see it as such because He's so gentle. Chambers goes on to say, all of God's revealed truths are sealed until they're open to us through obedience. He says you will never open them through philosophy or thinking. But once you obey, a flash of light, he said, comes immediately. Let God's truth work into you by immersing yourself in it, not by worrying into it. He says the only way you can get to know the truth of God is to stop trying to find out, and by being born again. Because if you obey God in the first thing he shows you, then he instantly opens up the next truth to you. You could read volumes on the work of the Holy Spirit when 5 minutes of total uncompromising obedience would make things clear as sunlight. So don't say, I suppose I'll understand these things someday. You can understand them now. Chambers goes on to say, it isn't study that brings understanding to you, but obedience. Even the smallest bit of obedience opens heaven. And the deepest truths of God immediately become yours. Yet God will never reveal more truth about himself to you until you have obeyed what you already know. He said, beware of becoming one of the wise and prudent. Because, as the Word says in John 7:17, if anyone wills to do his will, he shall know. My friends, this is so important, especially for those of you who struggle with feeling forgiven after abortion, with returning to the guilt, with returning to the grief, with feeling as if freedom will always elude you, and you will always have that horrible, horrible ache and emptiness whenever any thoughts of the abortion or abortions in your past come. No. Listen. Listen to what God is saying to you in the still, small voice, moment by moment, always an instruction for your good. Listen and obey. And I promise you, Chambers' words will bear fruit in your life. You will find that you will know exactly what to do, and you will see that your relationship with God will indeed be instantly perfected, and the peace that passes understanding will be yours. But if you turn away from obedience for even a second, it's darkness at work again. Let us know how it goes for you this week, won't you? I'm Kim Cotola. We'll be back next week for Cradle My Heart Radio.